Of course, everyone heads to the water when it gets like this. New water safety research shows a new approach to spotting rips is needed. Currently, photographic images of rips are used in schools to demonstrate what one looks like. About 5 people every year die in rip currents. The 19-year-old woman who was fatally attacked by a shark at Waihi earlier this month had been caught in a rip. And at Te Tahi Bay in Porirua last week, 2 children and the person who rescued them were almost drowned after being dragged out by a rip. Last month, 27 people were saved in 10 minutes on Sumner Beach in Christchurch because of a rogue rip. Of approximately 700 rescue missions, surf lifeguards say 85 of these are due to fast flows of water. New research published by Natural Hazards and Earth Systems Sciences, or published in it this month, is led by Dr. Seb Pittman from the University of Canterbury's School of Earth and Environment. The paper looks into the behaviour of rips and how proficient beachgoers are at identifying them, concluding videos and 3D immersive technology is needed to teach children how to spot rips. Rips. How to spot rips. Dr. Pittman is with us from RNZ's O Te Tahi Christchurch studio. Good morning, welcome.
Morena.
You probably like the ribs too. That's what we have afterwards when we're having a big feed. Hey, that figure earlier, is it 85% of 700 rescue missions?
It's about 85%.
Yes, right.
And that equates to 700. So they're actually doing more rescues than that.
I see.
But we think about 700 are rip-related per year around New Zealand.
Understood. So it's a very significant proportion. First, what is the definition? What causes a rip?
So a rip we can think of as sort of like a narrow river of water that starts near the beach and heads offshore. And so anything that's in the water gets taken with it, whether that's sediment or people, which is clearly our concern. And they're just driven by the waves coming into the beach. If you think of all that water rolling into the beach, it has to go somewhere. And the way it generally, or in certain circumstances, can move offshore is through these narrow channels. So that's the rip current. And we're talking a water flow that can be up to sort of 2 metres a second at times.
So if we then look at specific kinds of rips, what's the rogue rip, the one that happened at Sumner?
So we'd call that a flash rip, and generally that's one that's driven purely by a certain set of waves that come in. So these are perhaps the most dangerous, and that's sort of shown in your figure of 27 people rescued in 10 minutes. And the reason they're dangerous is because they're so unpredictable. So there's no signature in the sort of beach face that says this is where it's going to occur or when. They just sort of start up as a result of a huge amount of wave energy coming in all at once and that being dissipated. And they'll come and go within about 5 or 10 minutes, which explains why those rescues were so concentrated.
Go ahead.
And then the other type that we look at are more controlled by the seafloor and the configuration of the seafloor. We call these channel rips, and they're called that just because they flow out through deeper channels cut between sandbars.
What is your typical New Zealand rip, and are there particular kinds more prevalent in some of our most popular beaches?
Yeah, so the channel rips we focused on because they are the most common. You'll see them pretty much on any open coast beach. So generally sandy beaches, anywhere that you've got waves coming in and breaking across the, or you've got an active surf zone, you'll see rips generated. So they're the most common that we'll see. You can see them sort of every couple of hundred metres on most of our big sandy beaches. There's a few other types that happen along headlands or along piers, and they're persistent. We always know where they're going to be. But the channel rips are the ones that we focused on specifically.
How does the rip affect the swimmer? Is it a case sometimes of it will just carry you as a straight current? Other times, can it be more aggressive, pull you under?
So the pulling under is a big myth, and that's I guess one of the safety messages that we really fight to almost dispel. A rip current is just a lateral current, so it will just move you sideways. There's no component of undertow. It's not going to suddenly grab you and plunge you under the water. And so there's a real key drive in our safety messaging to make people understand if they can just lay and float on their back or tread water, then they're going to be fine.
That fear of being pulled under, does that fuel the panic that can see you going under?
Absolutely, yeah. People will, fight or flight. They'll be panicked to try and get out of it, fearing this perhaps this imminent this imminent force that's going to pull them under the water. And so most of the really serious rescues and even the fatalities we see are people expending all of their energy through panic.
Let's stay with the safety before we come back to look at the research and the education, because another thing that can happen is if two or more of you are in this situation, and again, panic can tend to lead to certain behaviours. So what is the thing to do if you're alone, and then what is the thing to do if there's a couple of you?
So if there's a couple of you, generally we'd say, you know, someone should stay as a spotter on the beach, and they can sort of give you an indication if all of a sudden you're drifting, and also that they're not in danger to raise alarm. If you're on your own, the advice if you're caught in a rip across all of these scenarios really is the three R's, and what we mean by that is relax, raise, ride. So the first thing we're asking people to do is relax and float, and this is really getting at controlling that panic response, understanding that you're not being pulled under. Yes, you might be being moved, but as long as you are happy to float, you can tread water or lay on your back, then you're going to be fine. The second of those R's is to raise your hand. And what we're saying here is that you're either going to signal the attention of lifeguards. Hopefully you've chosen a lifeguarded beach and you're swimming between the flags. But even if there aren't lifeguards around, that's a universal signal to surfers in the area, other swimmers, people on the beach that you need help. And the third of the R's is to ride the rip until it stops. These currents work, as we say, up to 2 metres a second. An Olympic swimmer at their best can swim about 1.8 metres a second. So you're really not going to fight this current. So we're asking people just to stick with it, either wait to be rescued or wait until the current stops and dissipates. And at that point, because all you've been doing is floating, you've conserved your energy and you can use that to then swim back through the breaking waves towards the shore.
If you are helping someone else, like say two of you are out there, and this is where, again, one person might panic and try and climb on the other. Again, how do you handle, or if you're trying to save someone, actually, what's the best advice for how to?
I'd have to defer this to the lifeguards in terms of their sort of strategies, but sure. Clearly the risk here is that you are pulled under. In fact, most of the, or a huge number of fatalities we see are actually bystander rescues. So people that go into the water to rescue someone without flotation gear, without perhaps being specifically trained to do so, and therefore end up in trouble. So if you're confident and competent in your ability in the water, you're probably looking to perhaps approach someone from behind and drag them on their back away from the current. But you just have to be so mindful that the panic response will be for them to plunge you under the water to help them get their breath.
Let's look at what you've done in trying to determine whether the way we're teaching people to spot a rip is working or not. What did you do?
So our starting point here, I guess, was this, you know, 700 rescues, 5 fatalities, and trying to understand, is this because people can't spot the danger to start with, or is this because people don't know what to do when caught in that situation? And ultimately, we think it probably is a combination of both. But we specifically wanted to address this this question of, do people know how to select safe and appropriate places to swim? So we based ourselves at Muruwai, well known for, you know, big surf, hugely problematic in terms of the number of rip rescues that are conducted there. And we surveyed beachgoers, and we started by asking them a number of questions about their swimming ability and their competence. And then we asked them to identify rip currents that we had in 2 photographs, because this is generally how we see school children taught. Obviously, going to the beach is the best means of communicating this, but it's not always possible. So many people are taught just using photographs. And then we said, well, OK, thanks for that. Let's now look out in front of you. And at the time, there was a dangerous, big, fast offshore flow, so a really well-established rip current there. We said, can you spot the rip at the beach today? And what we found overall is that 8 in 10, 78% of people couldn't spot the rip at the beach. But when we compared that to the photograph identification, we found that about only about a third of people could identify the rip in the photographs. And then when we asked those people to spot the rip in front of them, about 3/4 of them couldn't. So clearly their ability that they were taught wherever in schools, or their ability to spot a rip in a photograph, wasn't translating to an actual ability in real life.
What are you actually looking for, by the way?
So there's a number of things. The first key tip I can give you is get somewhere elevated. This all becomes so much easier if you're looking down on the water. So whether that's the access track or over the sand dunes, if you're looking for features in the surf, try and get some form of elevation. Rips generally show up as calmer patches of water. Because they flow through these deeper channels, the waves don't break as much. So you'll see lots of white water and wave breaking and the surf zone where water is flowing onshore. But actually what you'll see is gaps between these breaking waves, and that's actually where the rip is operating. You might also see plumes of sediment moving offshore. So as I said, it's not just people, it's sediment that can get carried off. But also look at the people around you and how they're working, specifically surfers that are well attuned to the way currents are operating. Surfers will generally use the rip current to get offshore. So if you see this constant circulation of people moving offshore on their surfboards in one spot, that's a really good indication that there's probably a rip there.
It's probably not where you want to swim anyway.
No.
Surfboards coming at you. So if that's what you're looking for, what is it about the photography or the photographic method of education that's missing, do you think? I mean, is it literally the right perspective? Or
perspective is huge. In order to make education through photography work, we have to use an elevated viewpoint. So this is either taken from a walkway or even drone shots. The rip is also generally centered in the photograph, so it's almost a given. You really struggle to miss the rip in these photographs the way they are set up. But as soon as you put someone on the beach at water level, you have waves rolling in, water moving left and right, and all of these other factors, people aren't able to compute and turn that into something meaningful.
I think you did your survey among actual beachgoers, and was that a particular demographic that you talked to?
We just targeted to get an even spread across everyone that was at the beach. So actually we saw a pretty equal split across ages, across genders, to try and just be representative of people that are using the beach who are...
Were some more confident of their abilities than others?
Yeah, so we see this a lot. In the rescue statistics, males, specifically young men, are overrepresented. They get into trouble more than perhaps they should. And so when we asked questions around competence and confidence in the surf, we saw generally young men were over-reported, or certainly reporting higher values for their competence. And that's really troublesome in a water safety sense, because what we think is happening is young people, generally young males, are over-predicting their ability and under-predicting the risk. So actually they're taking more risk-taking behaviour around the water.
If the photos are proving suboptimal, not entirely hopeless, some people could do it, but if they're proving suboptimal, what are you recommending for educators?
I think what we need to do is really, you know, get together as educators, as water safety experts, and come up with a package that is more representative. So that the first obvious step is to move from photographs towards video imagery. But we can take that a step further. The cost of things like 3D headsets or virtual reality is coming down. So actually, what we'd really like to do is have this sort of 360 video imagery of a rolling surf zone taken from water level. And use this through 3D headsets so that we can immerse people in that situation and make them consider all of these different factors, the way the waves are moving, the way the water's moving left and right, to try and pick out the rip.
How does this education happen, by the way? How does it happen now?
It's quite ad hoc. Certainly surf clubs are good means of doing this. So some surf lifesaving clubs will get school groups along and do it in situ. And likewise, some surf lifesavers will go into schools. Beyond that, it's not mandated in the curriculum. So it's not covered for everyone. But we're clear that actually schools should be a target population, because young people generally are overrepresented in the rescue data.
Seb, always a pleasure. Thanks very much, Seb Pittman. He is speaking to us from Christchurch. His research just published in Natural Hazards and Earth System Sciences this month. He's with the University of Canterbury's School of Earth and Environment, but has a particular expertise in rips. Very timely to be getting yourself schooled up.